Now, let's join the program Frank Muir goes into.
Goes into languages and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
An Englishman was back from a trip to France where he'd been learning the language, and he said to a friend, "It's such a hospitable place, too, you know. I mean, where else but Paris can you meet a man, a complete stranger, who'll buy you a meal, take you back to his flat, offer you his own bed to sleep in, and provide you with breakfast in the morning?" His friend said, "Did it happen to you?" He said, "No, it happened to me sister." In a theatre one evening, there was a terrible commotion in the front stalls. A couple came to take their seats after the interval and found a man sprawled right across them, and he was speaking rather strangely. He was saying, they asked him to leave, but he didn't seem to understand them, so they called the usherette, and she asked him to leave, and all the man kept saying was, so the usherette called over the front of the house manager, who said, "Foreign, is he? Right, never mind, ask me, Tom, I've got a few foreign languages." And he went across to the man, who was still saying, and he enunciated very, very clearly. He said, "Where do you come from?" And the man said, "The front row of the balcony." You know, for years I've travelled and acquired polish. Now I speak French, Italian, Japanese and Chippendale.
Chippendale furniture.
Yeah, well, how do you think I got the polish? Fellow walks up to a friend of his and he said, "My word, what a beautiful dog. It's enormous Alsatian." He said, not only is it a good-looking dog, but it also speaks a foreign language. So you're joking. He's been to university. He stepped in. He said, "Well, get him to say something in a foreign language." The dog went, "Meow."
Hi, now, class, any boy, what's the meaning of the French expression salle à manger?
Sales manager. In the First World War, when China and Britain were allies, China had an imperial army, the British general was talking to a Chinese general, and the Chinese general said, "Sir, we Chinese find it very hard to understand why it is that the British always win the important battle. Always when they lose a little one, but always win the important battle." And the British says, "Well, it's simple, really. In the British army, it's a great tradition that before we go into battle, we all get on the parade square, and the padre comes along with it, and we all kneel, and we pray to God." "Oh, the Chinese Imperial Army, just the same, before a big battle, all the Chinese troops go on the square, we're all on our knee, and the priest come, and we all pray to God." "Yes, but it's not everyone who can understand Chinese, is it?"
Great emphasis is placed in our schools on the learning of foreign languages, and this is as it should be. Communication is the beginning of understanding, and as world travel becomes easier and faster, it's increasingly important that everyone should be able to communicate wherever he or she ends up. But a knowledge of foreign languages doesn't necessarily bring judgment with it. Ambrose Bierce.
Linguist, a person more learned in the language of others than wise in his own.
Sheer fluency in foreign tongues can go to people's heads. Lewis Carroll.
I said it in Hebrew, I said it in Dutch, I said it in German and Greek. But I wholly forget, and it vexes me much, that English is what you speak.
Linguistic ignorance can be an advantage under certain circumstances. Sir Edward Appleton.
I do not mind what language an opera is sung in, as long as it's a language I don't understand.
Mind you, being a polyglot can be useful too. A remark attributed to the Holy Roman Emperor Charles V.
I speak Spanish to God, Italian to women, French to men, and German to my horses.
One of the simplest ways of acquiring linguistic skills is to follow a course of instructional programs on radio or television.
And now, intermediate French for beginners. Je suis ici à la maison de Monsieur et Madame Dubois. I am here at the house of Mr. and Mrs. Wood. Madame Dubois fait la ménage dans la cuisine. Mrs. Wood is washing up in the kitchen. Brother Jack, sleep well, ring the bell, and let's have a ding-dong. Ah, voilà, Monsieur Dubois. Ah, there is Mr. Wood.
Ah, Henri.
Ah, Henry.
Hello, Clotilde.
Hello, Clotilde. You are early tonight.
Oui, j'ai fini à la bonne heure au bureau.
Yes, I finished early at the office.
Quelle nouvelle aujourd'hui?
What's been happening today?
Oh, rien.
Nothing.
Qui est-il?
Who is he?
Qui?
Who?
Cet imbécile au coin avec un micro.
That imbecile in the corner with a microphone.
Jamais, jamais, jamais.
I've never seen him, never.
Tu crois que je suis un idiot? Je suis venu à la bonne heure du bureau et je te trouve avec ton amant au coin avec un micro.
Hello. You think I'm an idiot. I come back early from the office and I find your lover in the corner with a microphone. Hello.
Henry, pas ton revolver, non.
Ah, Henry, not your revolver, no.
Oh, mon Dieu, il est mort.
Oui, il est mort. Un moment, chérie.
He is dead.
Michael Bentin. French is still the first foreign language for pupils in most of our schools, which makes good sense, because the French and the British have been happily misunderstanding each other for centuries. But French isn't a language which appeals to everyone. A short extract from Charles Dickens' Nicholas Nickleby.
What's the water in French, sir? L'eau, replied Nicholas. Ah, said Mr. Lillywick, shaking his head mournfully. I thought as much. L'eau, eh? I don't think anything of that language, nothing at all.
Here's a confident little poem on learning the language by Ogden Nash. It's called Chacun a son Berlitz.
French is easy. But speaking French, I'm the champ of the Champs-Élysées. And since I can speak Parisian without a flaw, I will tell you why the crows, or les corbeaux, always win their battle against the scarecrows. It's on account of their esprit de corps.
Ever since the first attempt was made to interpret between English and French, mistakes have been made in translation between the two languages. So we'll hear now some classic schoolboy howlers. French expressions and what they should, but unfortunately don't, mean in English. First, hors d'oeuvre.
Horse's egg.
Entente cordiale.
Auntie's black currant.
A translation into French of Shakespeare's immortal line, tell me where is fancy bread?
Dites-moi, où est la pâtisserie?
Finally, a translation into English of a French line. Seule bonne femme est un œuf.
One good woman is enough.
Foreign languages are difficult, though. What one really needs is a running translation.
Il est toujours sur la bouteille.
He is always on the ball.
Comme un poisson, il boit.
Like a fish, he drinks.
Sortiront sur les fruits, les peignants, la ville rouge.
Let us go out on the tiles and paint the town red.
Éclatant chant,
burst into song.
On lui demanda,
they ask him.
Un libro.
Politely.
Je mettre une.
To put her.
Je laisse la dedans.
Stop, Timmy.
Gardez votre chemise sur, dit-il.
Keep your shirt on, said he.
Oui, notre grand soir.
Then, write the book.
Et après mort en verse la jarrette de pain.
And that really upset the apple cart.
Un ami d'enfant, il a mis son grand pied là-dedans, encore une fois.
He has put his great foot in it again.
That was John Gould, and the singer was Adele Weston.
Weston.
As well as teaching their pupils French, which might conceivably at some point be useful, schools are still pretty keen on cramming youthful heads full of dead languages. It is a pity that languages die, according to Dr. Johnson.
I'm always sorry when any language is lost, because languages are the pedigree of nations.
But some people think the decent thing to do when a language is dead is to let it rest in peace, not have its remains disinterred and raked over by grubby schoolboys. Heinrich Heine.
If the Romans had been obliged to learn Latin, they would never have found time to conquer the world.
Edward Gibbon did find one use for dead languages when writing his Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire.
My English text is chaste, and all licentious passages are left in the decent obscurity of a learned language.
Hence perhaps the expression, the Greeks have a word for it. But finding the occasional dirty bit is small compensation for the enormous slog of learning Latin and Greek. So there used to be sound economic motives for knowing a bit of Greek. Here's the opinion of the 19th century Oxford Don, the Reverend Thomas Gaisford.
The study of Greek literature not only elevates above the vulgar herd, but leads not infrequently to positions of considerable emolument.
Good point of view. That was in a sermon, too. This was Dr. Johnson's view.
Greek, sir, is like lace. Every man gets as much of it as he can.
And George Bernard Shaw.
Greek scholars are privileged men. Few of them know Greek, and most of them know nothing else.
Lord Byron didn't have much time for the splendors of ancient Greek civilization. This is supposed to have been his reply when it was suggested he might like to look at some archaeological sites in Thrace.
Do I look like one of those emasculated fogies? Let's have a swim. I detest antiquarian twaddle.
And here's a more recent objection from a letter to the News Chronicle.
Yesterday, somebody who should know about it told me the ancient Greeks were homosexuals. If so, they were a thoroughly bad lot. It's high time we banned Greek from our schools and universities.
Dead languages have been quite as productive as living ones, the schoolboy howlers. Let's hear a few logical but incorrect translations from the Latin. First, pax in bello.
Freedom from indigestion.
Infra dig.
Living in lodgings.
Sotto voce.
In a drunken voice.
Let's hear one from the Greek.
The word hypothesis comes from two Greek words, hippo, a horse, and thesis, placing. So it means putting something on a horse.
Just flogging a dead language here. Rather than Greek, perhaps one would do better to learn a really obscure living language. Say, Tongan.
Oh, it's hard to say.
Holly ma kitty luka chi chi chi.
But in Tonga, that means no. If I ever have the money, 'tis to Tonga I shall go. For each lovely conversation there will gladly make a day. And by the time she's said, it is usually too late.
Michael Flanders and Donald Swan. Differences in languages tend to bring chauvinism to the surface. Everyone feels happier with their own language than anyone else's. Here's Mark Twain on Leonardo da Vinci.
They spell it Vinci and pronounce it Vinci. Foreigners always spell better than they pronounce.
Our own Winston Churchill.
Everybody has a right to pronounce foreign names as he chooses.
He certainly did. But foreign languages do often sound most odd to the English ear. An observation from Paul Jennings.
It's difficult to decide whether translators are heroes or fools. They must surely know that the Afrikaans for Hamlet, I am thy father's ghost, sounds something like omelet, ek is your papa's book.
I don't know whether we are always as sympathetic as we should be to the plight of foreigners in our country. Here's a court report from the Nottingham Evening Post.
When a Latvian worker was summoned at Mansfield today for using bad language, he asked for an interpreter because he said he knew little English.
Because language is so much a part of national identity, it can be used politically. Often in history, an occupying government has tried to suppress the native literature of the people they've defeated. And the sanction need not always be as extreme as that. A report from a wartime Reynolds News.
At the wish of the King, Princess Elizabeth is to cut down the time spent on learning German. Arrangements have been made for her to begin lessons in Spanish.
Mind you, there are arguments other than political ones against the study of German. Thomas Love Peacock.
Life is too short to learn German.
I don't think Germans find learning English much easier.
I have here some letters written in answer to holiday inquiries, which we wrote to the Dolomite, and we received some replies in English from Tyrolean landlords. We have ample garage accommodation for your char. In the close village, you can buy jolly memorials for when you pass away. I send you my prizes. If I am dear to you and your mistress, she might perhaps be reduced. We are also noted for having children. Dear madam, this was to my wife. I am honorable to accept your impossible request. Unhappy it is, I hear I have not bedroom with bath. A bathroom with bed I have. I can, though, give you a washing. With pleasure. In a most clean spring with no person to see. I insist that you will like this. I am amazing diverted by your entreaty for a room. I can offer you a commodious chamber. With a balcony imminent to the romantic gorge, and I hope you want to drop in. A vivacious stream washes my doorsteps. So do not concern yourself that I am not too good in bath. I am superb in bed. Sorrowfully, I cannot abide your otter. This is it. Having freshly taken over the propriety of this notorious house, I am wishful that you remove to me your esteemed costume. Standing among savage scenery, the hotel offers stupendous revelations. There is a French widow in every bedroom. Affording delightful prospects.
It was the late Gerard Hoffnung. Ideally, the understanding of foreign languages should be the cement of international relations, leading to good humor and cooperation. A report from the California paper.
Impressed by the courtesy and friendship of their Spanish-speaking guides, the Chileans reciprocated by inviting a number of air station officers to a farewell party aboard the Esmeralda on Tuesday evening. The Esmeralda sailed from San Francisco on Tuesday morning.
In wartime, there can be a wonderful camaraderie between people of different tongues. Here's part of a dispatch printed in the Daily Telegraph during the last war.
In no man's land, a resident of Athens with only the slightest knowledge of English was halted by a British tank. He was asked for his name and address, which he willingly gave. Immediately afterwards, the tank plopped three shells into the unfortunate man's house. A typical Athenian, the man saw the joke, laughing heartily when the coincidence was later explained by the tank crew.
Linguistic misunderstanding can have unexpected political dividends. A report from the Sunday Times.
Many immigrants vote Labour because they think the labour exchanges where they sign on for unemployment benefit belong to the Labour Party.
But it's not just with immigrants that language problems occur in the British Isles. There are plenty of difficulties of understanding between the Welsh, English, Irish and Scots. Ah, the Scots. I think it's time for another language lesson, this time, Palliarna, Glasgow.
Yourself?
This a couple of cups of lunch, 5 30 scones and a bag of bath.
Let's check, Mark.
Oh, I'm here, ho, just a tanner. Deirdre, do you want a sweeter?
I'm easy.
Aye, I know, right, but what do you want?
What do you want? Bar of chocolate?
No, I'll not bore with a bar of chocolate. I've got a bar and I'll get another bar of mora. I'll get a pair of pears.
Where a pair?
Pair of pears on a chair over there. Where a pair of pears? Oh, what a pear fell on a flare.
What have you, pear? You're just in for a test.
It is time now to look at some of the things we have said. When the young man, or chancer, as he is sometimes called in our language, enters the shop, the lady behind the counter says,
Chancel? Chancel. This, of course, is a traditional greeting, but we only use it to a person we know well. Had the gentleman been a complete stranger, the shop lady would have given him the more formal greeting, Sanofi.
To this, we add the word colde, and so we have the phrase, Sanofi colde. In the flight, the young man would no doubt comment on the frustrating effect of low temperatures on brass monkeys.
The chancer began by saying to the shop lady,
These are a couple of keppers, parlinks, 5 30 scones and a bag of bar.
Notice the use of the word geezer.
It simply means give me ah. And so we have the interesting compounds frequently used in Glasgow. Geezer, off. Geezer, linear, phone. And geezer, look at your orange.
But back to our little shop. The man asks the young miss what sort of confectionery she prefers. She counters tenderly by inquiring if he desires a bar of chocolate, or chocolate, as we call it. He replies,
No, I'll not bore away a bar of chocolate. I've got a bar and I'll get another bar of mora.
Difference between the word bora, meaning bother, and bora, meaning bar off.
I'll not bother with a bar of chocolate.
I shall not bother with a bar of chocolate.
Next, he turns his attention to pears.
Oh, I'll get a pair of pears.
Where are pears?
Here a pair of pears on a chair over there.
Let us study that rather lovely sentence.
Here a pair of pears on a chair over there.
Remember, era. There is or there are. And this must not be confused with pera, which means pair of. But the words era and pera are often used together. Thus we have...
Era pera tin consolas.
There are two intellectuals. And when a Glasgow lady goes shopping for lingerie, she may be heard to say...
Era pera plumas.
Since there are two vivacious young ladies, we say...
Era pera hairies.
Now, finally, in the shop, the young man has inadvertently dropped a pear on the floor. He cries...
The pears fell on a flare.
Note particularly the word felona. This is generally applied to a gentleman who has been celebrating. We frequently use the word, for example, at Hogmanay. Thus, Rafaela fell on a pavement. Next week, we'll see what happens when Deirdre and Jeremy go... Dunra dunny! Tataradu!
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 That's lovely. Stanley Baxter with Doris McClatchy and Claire Richards. Finally, a very British complaint from a letter to the Evening Chronicle.
How can the French expect to attract our tourist trade? This year, at 5 different French hotels, the cat marked C turned out to be H.
Au revoir.
Frank Muir Goes Into Language was written by Frank Muir and Simon Brett and produced by Jeffrey Perkins.
You're listening to Radio 740 CBC Toronto.